This is Lori Morgan Ferrero of Red Hot Coffee, and you are in the right place for powerful storytelling for Web 2.0. I have a very special guest on with me today named Kate Yando, and Kate is the owner of Business Storytelling. So I knew when it came time to do this topic, she would be a perfect person for the go-to person to tell us about storytelling. Let me tell you a little bit about Kate. First of all, Kate Yando grew up in the frozen reaches of upstate New York. She's an East Coast gal. And when she was 22, she actually founded her own business in the Netherlands, creating and teaching customized English courses to European executives and diplomats. So she actually worked with clients like BMW, Royal Dutch Shell, the Dutch Secret Service, that's a little scary, and even the Vatican. And Kate traveled quite a bit, and she felt that she got more education than her students. When she came back to the U.S., she started working for a little company called Coca-Cola. And she wrote speeches there and presentations to the CEO as well as other senior execs. And she worked very closely with their marketing department and led projects on, just all sorts of projects with Coca-Cola. She continues working there. She's also helped co-manage Coca-Cola Radio. And she has other freelance clients as well. And she has, her other clients are like Home Depot. And these are corporate people. These are big-time people trusting their copywriting assignments to Kate. Aflac, the Sea Island Resort, Harrah's Entertainment, and many others. Kate also is the senior editor of Motto Magazine. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but it's a really fun magazine for our times. It's kind of green and funky and really does talk about Web 2.0 quite a bit. It's a very modern magazine. And she has blogs and podcasts that she does for Motto. And she is also a regular contributor to Pink Magazine and Atlanta Woman Magazine, and is probably one of the few people, certainly none that I know of, that has actually written for both Jane Fonda and Mike Ditka. Talk about the opposite sides of the spectrum. Kate has actually worked with me on my Elite Platinum program for over a year now, and she's a copywriter that I trust as really knowing her stuff, really making copy interesting and making it sing. She knows how to do it, and she is here to help us infuse storytelling into our copies. So, Kate, welcome to the line. Thank you for showing up.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that great introduction. Wow, I'm a little impressed by myself now.
You should be, exactly.
You made me sound great. I like it.
Well, you know what? You earned every bit of it. So, speaking of storytelling, let's talk about your story. How did you get into using storytelling as sort of the emphasis of your business?
That came from a lot of the work that I had done, both when I was teaching people abroad, and very often my students were executives. They were at a certain level, but they really felt that they couldn't get things done in, conducting business in English. Their English was generally good enough to travel and adequate, but they didn't feel they could really get their message across. They'd say, oh, if I could just sit and talk, like I talk to somebody, over dinner, in my own language, and just really explain to them, make them, tell them what we're about, I would be able to close this deal or do this presentation. And when I went to work for Coke and I wrote for so many different people, Coke is a company built on a story. I mean, really the product, right, it's sugar and some water and, magic. But it's all about the story that people attach to it, the moments that they have, the memories, the way it makes them feel. It's an expertly spun story. And so everything that I worked on for them always had elements of storytelling in it, a lot drawn from Coke's heritage, but also, they are experts in figuring out, what connects with people and what makes, what makes them feel something, because that's what makes it different. It's not so much the product, it's the feeling and the association that you have, that people classify themselves as, well, I'm a Coke person or I'm a Pepsi person, it's part of, it becomes part of their identity. So, when a brand can do that, it can really teach you a lot. So I would say that, just those different ways of conveying something, both to people with a new language and then, using this big brand really helped me, kind of focus on, you know what, that's the essence. No matter what you're doing, if you're making a postcard or a speech or a website, you know, well, what are you, you know, what's your story? What are you saying? And why should people, you know, why should people care?
Right. What's your story? I like that. So what's your story?
Yeah. And who doesn't want to hear that?
Yeah. Or share their own story, right?
Right, right.
You told me a story one time that I want you to share with the listeners about, I don't want to give it away, but you were young and you were at a
Oh, that one. Yeah. Well, I guess that would probably be my earliest start with storytelling. I was in kindergarten. It was my last day of kindergarten, and I was very much the runt of the litter. I started school a year early. You know, as you know, you see me, I'm short to begin with. And I also, just like now, like to overdress. So on the last day of school, you know, I had this beautiful white, like, smock dress, and I insisted on wearing, and our class went on a little trip to a local farm. And, you know, we walked around and we saw the animals, and at the end of the day, there was this game, and it was called the Greased Pig Contest. And what it was, there was basically like a fenced in, you know, like a pen and a pig that they put Crisco on, and then the kids could run around and they had to try to catch it. And whoever caught it, the teacher said, would win this prize. Well, the prize was this giant box of saltwater taffy. I mean, it was huge. It was literally like the size of my body. And I thought, oh, I want that. I can't, you know, think of it like your body made of candy. You know, what could be better?
Exactly.
But the teacher's like, no, you know, Katie, you stay here and sit with me. You know, little people always get, you know, they're always the pet. You know, sit right here. You know, you'll get all dirty. So I sat at the beginning of the contest, but the minute she looked away, I thought, that's it. I'm going for it. I went through the slats of the fence. I ran. And because I really liked stories about horses, I thought, you know, I'm going to jump on top of the pig and I'm going to ride it. So I jumped on top. I rode it. I slapped away all the other little hands on it. And so, you know, I was the last person on there. But right at the end, the pig decided he would teach me a lesson, and he stopped, you know, really fast right before his trough and flipped me off into the pig trough.
Such a visual.
It's just like Charlotte's Web, you know, where like the place where the rat lives, kind of like that.
Exactly.
So that's where I went. So you can imagine, you know, I was a mess. But, you know, to her credit, the teacher did give me the candy. And I had to go home on the school bus because we were later. And I remember sitting on the bus and all the kids were like, you stink, you don't, which I did. I didn't care. But I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, when I get home, I had better have something really good to say, because when my mother sees me, you know, hair, dress, you know, filth, apple cores, who knows what, I'm going to have a really good story.
So you learned how to tell stories, like, to get out of trouble, like, early on.
Exactly. Well, my family, they're a story people. They're all big talkers. So you have
right.
to, you know, you kind of have to have something good if you want to stay in the mix.
Well,
you can hold your place at the Thanksgiving table.
Well, so tell me, let's bring it back around to the Web 2.0 and why mm-hmm. storytelling is so critical for us as marketers. And
yeah.
Business.
Yeah. What's cool, what fascinates me, one of the many things is that, you know, storytelling, of course, is as old as time itself. You know, it's like cave people sitting around. You know, it's part of our, you know, what makes us human, really. But in this new world and the world that's coming, you know, that's so networked and so techie, it almost is, you know, it's not only is it, you know, critically important because it's always been, but it's more, even more critically important because of the way we live now. You know, we interact with so many different people in a different way, you know, online. We live our lives online. You know, we don't talk to people in the office. We email them. We can go and see what people in India are doing, you know, and, so we have, first of all, we have this interactivity where we just have all these other connections to people. And we also live in a world that seems really uncertain, you know? We have so much information and we don't really know who to trust. And that kind of takes us back to those cave people roots and the good story. And a story can really absorb you. You know, even though we have so much information swirling around us, if there's something that's really good, we'll sit. And, you know how this is, right? You should be working, and then you get on a website, and all of a sudden, you're sucked into the vortex.
Totally.
You know, you look up, and you're like, wow, half an hour, gone.
Yeah.
You know, so if there's something that gets you, it will get you, no matter what else you have going on. You know, once a good story gets your attention, all of a sudden, you have time. You know, nobody has time. We're busy, 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 until there's something that really makes us care. And then, all of a sudden, we're listening. And I guess another element about listening is, you know, we can't really force people to listen to a marketing message anymore. It's not like the days where, you know, your TV show was maybe, you know, in my parents' day, like sponsored by General Motors, or even in my own childhood where you had to watch commercials because there was no TiVo and, you know, things like you had to get a lot of messages. But now we don't really need to get anything, and we have so many things to choose from. You know, you can't force us to care. You have to make us. You have to connect with us and make us care.
Yeah, I agree. And so, it's so funny. I wonder if one of the reasons why I love reading about celebrities is like the unfolding stories in the press, because I love the train wreck.
Mm.
You know, Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
What are they up to today? Or Britney Spears.
Exactly. And I think those are all stories that we can all share. You know, you can talk to anybody about Paris Hilton. You know, it doesn't matter. You could be at the boardroom or the gas station, and, you know, you could just be like, oh, my gosh, could you see that? Or did you see that Lindsay video?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. They're like our virtual, you know, neighbors.
They are. I think that is, at least that's what I'm going to say.
Is that a good excuse to use? Yeah.
A good excuse, because I am a little embarrassed that I do get all of the celebrity rags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. I always say, like, well, you know, I need to know what other people in pop culture are thinking, because I might write about it.
Well, it's also, I say for my lifestyle, too, but I'm telling you, the stack is just ridiculous, so I've got to them. So, anyway, let's talk about the elements, then, of a story that some of the listeners can actually recognize.
Sure. And I think this is one of my favorite quotes. It's from Anne Lamott, who wrote a great book called about writing called Bird by Bird. And she talks about, you know, essentially good writing or a good story is about telling the truth in an interesting way. So we put interest into it, but the structure of a story is pretty much the same, whether you're talking about, you know, Hamlet or, you know, Spider-Man 3. It kind of follows a basic sequence. So, you know, first you'd have the introduction, the setting. If we're going back to the grease pig story, for example, there's this runty little girl in a white dress at the side of a trough.
Right.
The situation, you know, I want to get in there and grab the pig. No, you can't. You have to sit here. You know, you usually have your protagonist, the hero.
That's right.
And an obstacle to overcome, you know, in case, you know, teacher's hand / fence. There's some kind of imbalance, you know, oh, can I get it? Can I win it? Is that candy going to be mine? And then there's the resolution, you know, so it's that basic, you know, once upon a time, there was this story. I think someone, I think it was Ian Forrester said, facts are, you know, the king died, the queen died. And a story is the king died and the queen died of a broken heart. You know, so the story has something, you know, that says, here's what happened and, you know, here's the tension and it ties into some, that conflict ties into some kind of feeling. And I know that on the calls with you, and we've heard from Harlan Kilstein, he's great about this. He talks about how people place themselves in stories. You know, we become that person in our head that we're listening to.
Yeah, it's interesting. That was really important, actually, really important information. I just want to clarify it, so make sure that the listeners understand that.
Yeah.
If you're reading a story, is what Harlan was saying. You're actually putting yourself in the setting of that story. So you're kind of transporting yourself into the story that you're reading, which makes it so absorbing, like you were talking about earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps your attention, because you're kind of, I think it's called transference, I may be wrong on that, but where you overlay yourself, your experience, into that story, and you're like, okay, well, would that, I would do this, I would do that, or I wouldn't do that. Anyway, you get absorbed because you see you, and as we know, in marketing or in anything, frankly, it's all about me, what's in it for me.
Right, exactly. Yep, and even, you know, even if it seems really far-fetched and strange, like, think of the movies that we like to watch, you know, The Robert McKee, you know, the great screenwriting storytelling guy, talks about, you know, we'll pay money, that we, you know, hard-earned money, to sit in the dark with strangers, or we're not supposed to talk, we're not supposed to bring our own food, and we're experiencing these emotions and experiences, like, you know, we're going to war, we're getting blown up, whatever, that we'd never want to have, but yet we're in it for those 2 hours because we're absorbed by that story.
Right. You said something else earlier about the conflict and the friction that it's much more interesting to read something that's interesting, such as the king died and the queen died of a broken heart. I mean, just if you look to stir up a little juice, a little emotion, I think that's going to make it a lot more powerful.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, it has that conflict, and it has a real voice and a personality.
Right. Well, so where do you find ideas that will appeal to your audience?
Well, that's
an idea store.
Yes, and here it's at this website. Write it down.
Right.
I wish, or maybe a pill. But that's kind of where the internet. That's kind of where the web comes back in. I don't know what people did before. I'm glad I didn't have to work then. Because, well, I guess I would have been in the library a lot, but I think you can find so much, so many of the ideas. Of course, you know, if you can get out and see people and talk to people, that's fantastic. But a lot of times I can't do that because I'm on a deadline and I have to immerse myself in a world that's not mine, and I have to do it really, really fast. So normally I'll be on, you know, if you just Google search tricks, you'll see like little tips to get better results. But one of my favorite ones is there's a Google search option you can choose where you search blogs. And I know we're going to talk about blogs a little later on.
Oh, yeah.
But I find if you can get blogs, you know, say you're writing for I'll imagine like pathological gamblers. Well, there's blogs, you know, where they talk about, you know, their world, and there's people, you know, you'll see what their controversies are, what people write back about, their language, you know, it gives you a sense to get inside, their head. So I'll read that.
Are you curious? There are blogs on that kind of those topics?
There's blogs on everything. I mean, pretty much.
Hooker blogs.
Yes, I'm sure.
I never thought about there being such a variety, but you're right. I mean, the blogosphere is expanding out.
Oh, yeah. And it's just blogsearch.google.com, or you can just put in Google blog search.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, awesome.
And you know, you could put in pretty much anything, and you'll get some blogs if you just do a Google search. But it will just, you know, it'll come up with, you know, all kinds of stuff that has, you know, blogs that might be from that community. It might be someone who writes about hookers or gamblers or whatever.
Right.
But it's a quick little passport. And I know that when you and I were collaborating on the project that was in England, and we wanted to know, like, why was it so horrible to get a parking ticket in London? Like,
exactly.
You know, what's the big deal? That was like something that this product was going to help people avoid. And when I went on blogs about, you know, I put in something about like parking, London problems, and I got all these things from tourists who were like, this is horrible, it's so ill-marked, and it cost me like $100, and it ruined my vacation, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, there's our pain, you know, there's our hook.
Exactly. That's true.
And it was from a real person. So, you know, it enabled us to kind of get that in our head, because I was thinking like, well, gosh, I've been in London, I've never driven in London, I don't know. There it is. And another one that I love, that you don't have to be electronically connected, you just have to get yourself to a bookstore, are magazines. I love, you know, of course I write for magazines. I like, you subscribe to everything. I love magazines. But this
right.
I got from Dan Pink, who, well, kind of a refinement of it, that wrote this fantastic book called A Whole New Mind that has a lot of good, great information, and also a whole chapter on story. But when you go look at a magazine, you know, a magazine is like a roadmap to what the target audience wants, you know. People read O because they want to live like Oprah. We're looking at it in style because really we'd like to be that celebrity and have that house. And, you know, the guys who read, you know, Motorcycle Monthly want that Harley Davidson or that BMW. So you get a direct, you know, overview of, you know, who these people are and what do they want. And what he tells you to do actually is a little bit different. If I go back to my example of like, if I were writing something about gamblers,
right.
They have magazines, and in there you can, it's kind of like with the blogs, you can see what they're interested in, what the issues are, words they use, what fires them up. But what he says, if you are kind of stuck for ideas, you go to the bookstore and you get 5 magazines, but they have to be random magazines, like stuff that you would never pick up. So you say, I'm going to sit down with Cat Fancy, you know, horse racing,
horse
international, right, photography, whatever, Chihuahua World, and Needlepoint. And I'm kind of making those up, but I bet there's magazines that are exactly close to that, right? And so you sit down and you start flipping through those, and you just, it loosens up your mind, and you start making connections. Like, you might see something in, you know, Cross Stitch World that you're like, wait a minute, huh, the way they explain that actually makes sense, you know, in this way. Or you might see even like a color or a pattern, or it's a great way to kind of get around your old, okay, all right, let me try to think of something, you know, blank screen. You know, it shakes you up and breaks you out of that. So those are two of my very favorite ways to get ideas and to start to get into character, to get inside the head of the person that I'm writing for.
I hadn't thought of that as far as stories, but I do that exact same trick for copy. I look at how other people do ads in those different magazines as their target market. So now I have another purpose for those magazines.
And you know, you could find a great, you know, there could be a great anecdote, you know, in the Gambler magazine, and you're just like, gosh, that's it. I can tweak that a little bit and make that the opening story of my sales letter.
What do you think of a magazine like Reader's Digest that has like so many different things thrown in? You find stories in those kinds?
Yeah, I guess you could. I guess when I use those, I usually am generally looking for a specific target audience or a specific demographic or feeling, you know, and that one, because it's meant to appeal to a broad audience, I think it definitely has utilities if you're looking for kind of classic stories. Like Reader's Digest probably always has, you know, someone who overcame an illness, you know, a celebrity. Right. They seem to be a lot about like redemption type stories.
Yeah, very formulaic, I guess.
Yeah, but you could find those classic things that are classic because, you know, they work. So I think that can be a good source of, you can maybe take that framework and then put something on top of it that applies to your target audience a little more.
Exactly. That makes sense. So what else can we find ideas?
Well, those are good ideas. And you know, read, you know, I say, you know, read everything. You know, you never know where a great idea is going to come from or where you'll find something that you think, oh, well, you know, you never know what's going to be useful. I mean, there's so many, especially, you know, as a copywriter, when you write for so many different audiences and different, you know, different types of people, where you'll find that little nugget that you'll say, oh, you know what, that's perfect. And right. Think about the stories that you love and the stories you remember. You know, well, what are your favorite movies and your books that you've read a million times? Well, think of those stories kind of in that more critical way. Okay, well, what is it about them? What kind of story is it? What kind of concept is it? Why does it, you know, why does it stay in my head? And then use those elements. If you're talking, you know, for example, if you want to write about your own business, then use that to write, you know, the same elements to write something about you.
Makes sense. I was at a mastermind meeting last week, and one of the things that they mentioned was that to really, really like know what's in the head of like your target audience, ride the bus. Or go to Walmart and eavesdrop and like listen to, or go to the mall and listen to what you're talking about. Seriously. So I don't know if you could find story elements in something like that.
Oh,
listening
absolutely.
On other people.
Oh yeah. I have that on my cheat sheet that I have at the end. It's one of those ways to think like a writer is just to eavesdrop on every, you always get something, you know, even it might just spark something in your head and, you know, you're at line in the coffee shop and it just makes your life more interesting. Makes your life more interesting, too. You know, I find me, especially, I can be kind of impatient. And instead of sitting there going, oh, God, why didn't that person, why didn't they look a little faster? It's like, you know what? Let me just see what's going on over here. Oh, they're breaking up. You know, and again, look, then I'm in a story. And then again, we were talking earlier, then I don't care what time it is. Because I've got something that's captivated me, at least for a little bit.
Right. That totally makes sense.
I'm in the story. Oh, I was like, well, you should dump him, I think. Oh, no, that's right. That's a red flag. And then, oh, yes, I wanted a latte. Yeah.
I often try to weave stories around, like, what my regular activities do. Like, if we go skiing with my family or, you know, it's just a sort of a starting point, and then I'll build on it and take it in the direction that I want the reader to follow.
Yeah, and you do a great job of that. I think that like gives your writing so much personality, and that you're, even people don't know you, they feel like they know you, like you've created this great character, and it's real because it's obviously you do, you know, this is your life.
Right.
But it's really entertaining and compelling. It's like, oh yeah, what's she up to? Oh, that's cool.
Thank you. Well, so let me ask you for our listeners, where do they start? From, you know, they're looking at their blank page or they have their ideas. What's the first thing to do?
Okay, well, the very first place you need to start is, you know, maybe obvious, but it's really not obvious to a lot of people, is you're going to start with your audience. You know, who are these people? You know, and you do a great job in your classes of illustrating, you know, the concept of the target. You create that individual character. What are their characteristics? What do they look like? What do they dream about? What do they think about? So know who you're talking to, and then know, what do you want them to do at the end of your story? So you've got, you know, say that it's almost like a trip. So like starting point A is like the audience right now, their hopes, dreams, cares, objections, you know, whatever. And then the, you know, the destination point is what you want them to do when they finish reading this. Buy your product, sign up for something, visit your website. So when you have the start, you have the destination, now your story and your material comes in the middle. Okay, well, what's going to get them there? What's going to get their attention? What's going to overcome their objections? What's going to give them enough information to be intrigued, but not so much that they're overwhelmed? And, you know, it's about not getting caught up. And this is so classic, but we always get caught up in, like, us, because, you know, it's us that we're interesting to ourselves. You know, we get caught up in what we have to say, like, oh my gosh, did I say that right? What? But then we forget, wait a minute, well, what do we want them to do? We're not talking to ourselves, we're talking to this other person. So, you know, how can we get them? And it's funny, that reminds me, not too long ago, you know how I like kind of like karaoke. I do like karaoke, and I went out with a group of people. It was after an engagement party, and it was kind of a mixed group of people. And two of the guys from the party had gone up to sing, and they were all like, "Oh, I'm great at singing. I'll bring the house down." And they stunk out. I mean, people were like quiet, like going back to the bar, and I was like, "Ooh, tough crowd." Well, I wasn't like paying attention, but my husband, you know, being a loving and fun character that he is, had gone up to the karaoke host and given him $20 and said, "Here, this is, you need to call on her and just, you know, announce her name." And then she has to get up, because he saw that I thought, well, I'm not going to have to sing now. I'm just going to, you know, sit back and laugh at people. Well, he called my name, and I thought, I walked up and he said, "You know what? This had better be really, really good." And I thought, I thought, all right, what do I do, you know, in my life all the time? Know your audience. So I looked around at the people that were standing there, and I was like, okay, 90% men, nice hair, good clothes, nice skin, a couple people have a boa. Okay, this is not the time for hard rock or country music.
Was it a gay bar?
Yes. Yes,
it
was.
Are you serious? I love it.
This is the time for the little black dress of karaoke. This is time for ABBA.
Oh, yes. So,
take a chance on me. And, you know, I'm not a great singer, but, you know, I generally have a good time. I like to make people laugh. And, you know, it's kind of like skydiving. Like, okay, well, now I better get up and do it. And right. So with that, of course, they love it. They all, you know, and I need two men to sing the backup parts. It's very easy to, like, bring up two men. And, you know, by the end, they were literally, like, they were kind of a big staircase by the stage. They'd all come up to the staircase, and they were kind of, like, hanging from the ceiling, just singing, and their drinks, and, you know, it's so fun. But it's, like, that's the same principle. It's, like, take a second and think about who you're talking to and what would really, you know, push their buttons.
Yeah, you do have to know who is on the other end of that page, on the other side of the page.
Yeah, and when you do that, you know, when you're writing, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. You kind of got to get warmed up a little bit. You know, you can play certain music that you think these people might like. You can use your trick of, like, setting the timer, the chicken timer, and say, okay, I'm just going to write some stuff for 20 minutes, see what comes out.
Right.
You know, and just get something moving, and then very often, you know, you'll find out. And then you can go back and look at it and say, okay, is this going to get me to my destination? Is this selling? And it's practice, like anything, you know. It's not, people think writing can be so arty, but, you know, I think it's like more just like a skill, like a shoemaker or something. Like, you know, you think it's like a craft. So the more you do it, the easier and then more adept that you get, and, you know, you figure out things that work, and you're always, you know, evolving and trying to make things better from what you did before.
I agree. And there's also, I forgot about this, but as far as getting ideas, you know, Dan Kennedy is a huge, huge proponent of telling stories. And if you read a lot of the great copywriters, like Gary Halbert and John Carlson, they're always weaving stories into their copy. And at one of Dan Kennedy's events, he recommended that we take once a week, we get a photograph, whether clip art or a photograph, it's usually probably not of your family, but it could be, but in general, like just random art, and you write a little mini story about it. And at the end of the year, you have 52 stories that you can just pull from and use as starter for your copy. It's just to keep that wheel.
Great. And it's that habit. It's like, okay, I've done this. Right. I've done this 50 times. I can do it again.
Exactly. And then I want to just bring up one other thing, because I can almost feel the fear of people going, you don't want me to talk too much about myself, but you want me to talk about myself. What's the balance?
Mm. So how to kind of, you mean avoid the pitfall of talking too much?
Yeah. Or? Yeah, exactly. Like going rambling. Because I've read stories that are, they're rambling on and like, let me tell you about my life story. In fact, I have love her. I love her to death. She's great. And she's got, when I talk to her, she's funny and sharp, super smart. And when I read her story, it's three full, like, web pages long. It's really, really long. And it's just, I mean, it's practically from her birth and to everything she's ever gone through. I just want to hear the moment that changed you and why you're doing what it is that you're doing today. Like, who you were before, what happened, who you are now. That's all I want to hear.
Yeah, it's like that basic structure. And, you know, a lot of times I've read people say this, like, when you write something, go back and then take out the whole beginning. Cut out the first three paragraphs.
I fully agree. It seems
You're just warming up and it's fun to drop somebody in the middle, you know? Like, remember, I think it was a couple weeks ago, you had that fun story about, like, oh, I'm going to the spray tan, and I'm going to go to the spray tan salon, and you met the woman there. We were laughing about this earlier, and I said, what you could also do, talking about dropping in the middle, you could have started that story also with something like, and there I was, standing naked, like John Wayne, waiting for the cool jets to hit my body. Hello, I'm awake.
Absolutely, yeah, then I'd be like, what's next?
And you do that in your stuff all the time, like your one that you sent out about, like, this is scandalous, watch out.
Oh, yeah.
So you gotta catch people with something, and also the people that kind of get down on themselves, we have so much bad stuff we hear. We don't want any more, do we? Debbie Downers.
Not unless you can turn it around and kind of laugh at yourself.
Exactly, exactly.
I totally agree.
A little bit goes a long way. That self-deprecating a little bit is funny, it humanizes us, right? But it's like salt, like a little bit is tasty, but there's too much, you're just like, oh, I'm full.
Totally.
No, thanks.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, don't detail overload. Don't get too much of a downer. Maybe cut off that beginning and, always focus on the audience and think, okay, maybe show your stuff to people, read it to people, your husband, your kids, or whatever. Watch to see when their eyes start to glaze over,
Exactly. Exactly. So anything else about where to start?
I think that'll kind of kick you. Yeah, and I think that's kind of will kick you off pretty well.
I think so as well. So let's talk. I actually just wrote an article about this in my e-zine that you'll see later when it comes out today about personality.
So great.
Personality in your writing is underrated, and sometimes people get a little nervous about that. So how do you actually put personality in the writing?
Well, yeah, that's a great element. And, people should definitely, if they're not reading your stuff already, they should read the stuff that you write because you do a fantastic job with that. And, there's a lot of people like Wendy Friesen, who spoke to us at the retreat we had a while back. It's Wendy.
Oh, yeah.
He's a hypnotist, hypnotherapist. She has
Wendy
tons of
I.
Wendy with an I.
Yep. I.com.
Yep. And these people are authentic, and you and both of you and people who are good are not afraid of their view of the world. You put it out there, and it's like, when you're thinking of this, imagine that you're, for example, you write like you're talking to like a good friend. You're looking at him in the face, you're not BSing, you're not telling him something that's not true. This is, this is real. And, keep it entertaining. So, play with words to keep interest, maybe drop him in the middle, maybe not tell him everything. And, reading other people, you mentioned, John Carlson and Dan Kennedy, they're really good. But if you're thinking like, okay, I can read all these people, but what's me? Like if you're having trouble figuring out what your own, writing personality might be, you can think about how you talk, you can ask people close to you to describe you. Like, hey, if you had to sum me up in five words, if I was going to get on Match.com or something, what would you say? Find that, and sometimes it helps to take your writing and read it out loud. Does it sound conversational? I very often, you can catch so many things if you read stuff out loud, and
absolutely.
I don't do this as often as I should in haste to get stuff done. But sometimes you're like, ooh, that's so clunky, but when I'm reading it, it looks perfectly fine, but it's not. It kind of takes you outside yourself, and you get to hear it like another person would hear it. And if none of this is working, then
you know, you can always try something like you can quote unquote borrow a personality, you know, get into character. Okay, I'm going to write this as if I am whoever, just to kind of teach yourself and get yourself into, you know, into a voice and get yourself to take some risks. But again, not risks that are going to be in conflict with your audience and what you want your audience to do. You know, there's the line between like, I mean, some people would say there is no line between completely offending people. You know, like everything is good publicity. I know that a lot of the male copywriting giants, you know, just think you should just put it all out there, make them mad. I'm not quite so sure. I think that there's other, you know, there's different approaches. But I mean, if there's something with a definite personality, it has, it gets attention.
Yeah, it does have to have personality. And I don't fully disagree with that. I don't try to piss people off just to do it, but
right.
I also think that, you shouldn't worry so much about offending somebody, that if everything
is
plain vanilla, how boring is that? You've got to stretch yourself a little bit and don't worry about what other people think about you. And especially if you did what you said, which is create a personality, that it's kind of like a role. It's not even, it's like a heightened version of you. And that's one of the things I wrote about today. In fact, I came up with a new phrase.
Ooh,
it's called a yarkit.
So a yarkit.
The yarkit is a play on my famous target technique. And you establish your target market and distill it down to one person, and that's who you write your copy to. Well, a yarkit to me is creating the persona. It's the you in your
target. Ooh, so I love it.
Isn't that funny?
It's
like, who do you want to be? Do you want to be like perceived as gruff or irreverent or approachable, or how would you like to be perceived? And you create that shell around yourself. It doesn't even have to be you. Like Dan Kennedy is not as grumpy as he appears in his writing at all. But he knows that he needs to pump up the qualities of his personality in order for his copy to stand out.
And right.
So
right.
Yeah. So that's creating New York gifts. That's my contribution.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, but that's it. You know, and true, people are so afraid. You know, we get so afraid. It's like, first of all, no one really thinks about you as much as you think about you. And, you know, we're all, you know, we have so much to think about and read and catch up on. And if it's too vanilla, if it's just the same thing that I've seen 100 times, then it's very easy for me to just click and, you know, to send that right to the delete.
Exactly.
Bye-bye. You know, there's next. There's 5 million other things that I could be looking about. So yeah, that personality, be that character. You know, you can be, maybe you're not like in your face-to-face 3D interaction quite like this, like you said, like Dan Kennedy, but it's great to be able to do this in another arena. You know, it's like your alter ego. You know, it's your Clark Kent, Superman.
I love it. That's exactly what it is. It's like your alter ego, and it doesn't have to be all you, but it can have elements of you. And the qualities that you want to highlight, you highlight.
Yeah, exactly. Bring them out, and whatever makes sense for you and your brand and your product, and you know how you want people to think about you, to describe you.
Exactly. And there's another thing that it's just sort of a copywriting tool. You don't have to be you. You could be like your pet writing, or your computer mouse could be writing about how overused I am, or you know,
right.
It doesn't, you can stretch a little bit, and that's perfectly fine and acceptable. In fact, one of my friends who's a copywriter, Michelle PW, has her dog write a column, Nick. So he writes, he has Woof from Nick. It's very cute.
Mm-hmm. And people respond to that, don't they? Because the people are like, I love my dog. Oh, my dog does that. And so you've already tapped into something that they care about.
Exactly. Exactly. Or you can just like swipe an identity like you mentioned, where you can just like find some copy that you resonate with and kind of like overlay your personality with.
Yeah. Or who would you really want to be, you know, in real life if you had the boldness or whatever it is to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what would Paris Hilton write in a
spell check. Right. Oh, who knows? Maybe Paris is just working with her persona, and underneath it, she's really very nuanced and literate, and she just knows that that's not going to sell anything.
That would be shocking and hysterical.
That would be. Maybe she can come out of prison with a really good book, like when Martha Stewart went to prison.
That would be a miracle.
People are full of surprises. You never know.
That is so true. It's so true. Well, let's talk about features and benefits in storytelling, because there's actually a lot of structure that's similar to, you know, regular traditional copy that you can just overlay into storytelling, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. And you have a great way of teaching people to, you know, to lay out, you know, what are those features and benefits. And it's one, you know, there's one thing to just maybe, you know, you might figure them out and make them in a list like you train people to do. But then once you have that, you can take it and use a story to dramatize it, you know, because nobody really likes to be sold to, you know, but if we're being sold to, we don't know, we don't mind, because it's, you know, it's like the people sitting in the dark, you know, watching that war movie. It's like, oh, but I'm interested. So I think once you figure out what they are, for example, we had the woman at one of our workshops that had that special serenity pillow.
I think
we used that as an example. Remember that? And it's like it had all these different elements. But you could take, you know, it was organic and natural, and it doesn't mess up your neck. And, you know, you could introduce that with a story. It's like, I had never slept through the night. You know, there's been 10 years I'd never slept through the night, and I was beginning to think that I was turning into a monster.
Exactly.
And then I brought home this pillow, and, you know, it didn't make me sneeze. You know, whatever. You can take that as kind of your framework, and you just weave those into, that's one way you could do it. I'm sure you have some other ways you could bring those to life.
Well, you could also say, you gave it as a gift to your friend, or my friend gave me this gift, and I had, because I was cranky, and she was thinking, you just need a good night's sleep, and she gave me this amazing pillow, and the very first night I tried it, I woke up the next morning refreshed, and as if I had had a massage.
And awesome.
Right. You can take it in any direction, but just if you do focus on what the benefits are, meaning the emotional component of what the story is, it'll really serve you in copy in particular, because people, again, they want to know what's in it for me.
Yeah, and they can put themselves in there, and it's not the fact. It's like when I would write speeches, a lot of times they would start with a story. Because if you stand up there and it was like, okay, you know, people of, you know, CARE International, all these children are dying, and, you know, there's a crisis looks like this, and there's $X billion, and the world will run out of water in 5 years, you know, things like that, we automatically will kind of shut down, right? Because we're like, oh, God, I can't even process that, I don't want to think about that. But if it starts with a story about, like, say, one person, you know, in a village in Kenya, and this is, you know, that this is her day, but then this project came, and here's what happened, and now she goes to school, and her mom now has a business, then we're in it. We're saying, oh, okay. Huh.
Exactly.
And we'll remember that. We won't remember, like, the 2025, the world will run out of water, but we'll remember what it was like for that person that we heard about.
That's really true. That's another great thing about storytelling. You're right. You remember a story much better, and you can tell it to another person much more clearly than just, you know, facts and statistics. It sticks in your brain a lot more clearly.
Yeah, and that reminds me, I wrote this down here. This is a quote from Dan Pink that I love. It's from that book, A Whole New Mind.
Right.
And he says, when facts, and this kind of ties into the whole web world, web 2.0, and when facts become so widely available and instantly accessible, each one becomes less valuable. What begins to matter more is the ability to place these facts in context and deliver them with emotional impact. That's the essence of story. Context enriched by emotion. So it's like, yeah, anybody, a kid can find the same information that a reference librarian can. If I want to know what's the temperature in Belgium right now, I can find it. Who cares? You know, anybody can find that. Right? But what, you know, the context and the emotion and how you frame things up, that's what, you know, that's the magic. That's what connects.
Yeah, exactly. That is the magic. So again, what are some of the pitfalls? We touched on a few, like don't be too negative and too much of a downer. It's okay to create pain when you express the solution right away. That's okay, but just don't go on and on. So what are some other pitfalls about storytelling?
Maybe I can show a little bit when we start to talk about some of the new media things that are out there.
Oh,
they kind of come to life in some of these new tools and new platforms. So come on, if you don't mind, let's move into that a little bit, and I'll show you.
And you'll flag us when it's like, okay, pitfall,
right? Red flag, danger, okay. Danger, Will Robinson.
Perfect. Okay, so let's talk about Web 2.0. It's At first, I thought that was just a bunch of crap, to be honest with you. Whatever, they're just trying to get, you know, headlines with a new catchy little phrase. What is 2.0?
More jargon, and, you know, like this, yeah. You know, it's just, it's not like an absolute, you know, laid in stone definition, but it is a very powerful concept. And the concept of this is not like a new application or something that Microsoft wants you to buy. It just seems like this is the next phase of the evolution of the internet. Whereas the beginning, you know, it was very much this informational medium. Now we're getting into stuff that's like, that facilitates collaboration and sharing. People are participating in providing content in so many different ways. And the web gives them a platform to bring that content to so many different people in different forms, forms that, you know, even a few years ago were not available to the average person. For example, a good, I guess one way to start thinking about that is the whole idea of a podcast. And, you know, simply put, a podcast is just, you know, you offer audio, like a little radio program, you know, it's created, it's a file. You can download it. You can put it on your iPod. You can listen to it on a computer. It goes where you go. You can consume it later. It might be updated every week, so it's like you can subscribe to it. So it's like you get a free story every week. And, you know, these are things that you could get on, like, you know, the New York Times website and things like that. But, you know, now with the technology, anybody who has a microphone, you know, some generally free or inexpensive software and a few ideas can create a podcast. They could put it on the iTunes store. And in theory, they have the same access to a worldwide audience as, you know, Madonna or whoever. And it's funny because the pitfall to avoid, the best podcasts are short. They're like 5 to 15 minutes long, you know? It's like, you get these little nuggets. Some of them, some good ones are longer, and a lot of some of the professional ones that are taken from other media are a bit longer. But, you know, these podcasts, you can pick and choose whatever you like to listen to, and it's almost like you can program your own radio station. You know, I'm really kind of interested in this, or I'd like to learn about, you know, if you haven't been to the iTunes Music Store, you should go and just look at the podcast dashboard just to see the amazing amount of options that are out there. And this is, again, a great thing you can use when you're researching, if you're trying to get ideas, you're trying to get inside the head of an audience. You know, you've come up with a great product, even, say, for surfers. Well, there's a lot of surfing podcasts out there, even though you wouldn't think you could, like, really learn to surf just by listening. They do have podcasts that tell you that.
Wow.
There's stories. There's, like, what people talk about, like, the best wax that they use for their board or, you know, and a lot of these are created just by regular people, but who have a passion for whatever the subject is.
Right.
And it's, you know, what else is really cool? The whole notion that, you know, you have this access and you have this possibility. You have this possibility to get your story out through this means to so many different people all over, you know, all over the world. And on the iTunes store, you'll see there's a list that will have like the top 10 podcasts. And it's funny because it's a mix of things that you might know, like stuff from NPR, ABC. But then there's random stuff like this thing called Coffee Break Spanish, which are these two people in Scotland. I love this one. I'm hoping that I can speak Spanish with a Scottish accent now. Where they, you know, they give you like a 5-minute lesson, you know, every week. And there's like two people in a coffee shop in Edinburgh, and they record this thing. And there's somebody called Grammar Girl, and there's like a Manners Guy, and they're right next to National Geographic. So, you know, anybody has access to get their, literally in this case, to get their voice out. And what I think is interesting in a storytelling sense about the podcast, you know, audio is really intimate. It's like a bedtime story, you know, it's like, tell me something, tell me a story. You hear a voice, and, you know, it's not that hard to add, like, sound effects and, you know, bumper music at the start and at the end and make it sound very smooth and professional, and you can retake it and mix it. And it is literally like having someone's voice with you, and because you don't have to tune in at 8 o'clock on Tuesday when it's on, you just take it and you consume it whenever you want. You know, and the other thing that makes it interesting from a marketing perspective is if someone, you know, downloads your podcast, well, they've opted in. They've chosen. It's that Seth Godin notion of that permission marketing. At least for that one time, until they hear it, they might not like it. They care. They've put their hand up and said, hey, I want to know more about surf wax or
right,
pillows
exactly. Well,
or Spanish.
Could actually be a podcast as well. This, what we're recording right now.
Yeah.
People can put it on their iPods. That seems to be the standard, although I have a Creative and an iPod. I never use my Creative.
I was going to say, do you ever use the other one? Yeah.
No, I don't know how.
I mean, you know that technology's taken over, like when the whole, you know, all the verbiage, everything around it is all just called pod, you know, podcast, iPod.
Yeah.
But I love those for downtime. You know, aren't they the best? Like when you are in line at the post office, or I'm often in the car for like 6 hours at a time. Man, I have that, and I feel I've you know, it's a good investment. I've listened to stuff, I've learned things, I'm entertained. It's like I have a really good passenger, even if I don't have a passenger in the car.
Yeah, it's your rolling library or rolling.
So I got someone talking to me the whole time, and I can talk back to them if I want. And so it's a great thing, you know, to start listening to these if you're at all interested, and just kind of see what see what appeals to you and give it a try. It's really not so hard.
And obviously, the most interesting ones are the ones that are going to have story connection.
Oh yeah,
because that's going to keep you absorbed, and you'll remember it better, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, and the things that people go back to. So yeah, they're interesting for that, for the story, for the voice, and also for the very kind of niche. And this is the same with blogs, like communities that are represented, like things that you never knew that there are people who are passionate about, like this thing. They're out there, and they are communicating and sharing content and learning from each other with these technologies.
So let's talk about blogs for a minute, because they're getting pretty popular. They have been for a while, but a lot of traditional websites are actually turning their websites into blogs, something I've actually considered myself. So
So just having the blog.
Right.
Yeah, well,
a blog. Tell us.
So then the blog, in a nutshell, is, you know, it's kind of like an online diary. It's a medium. You go to it on the internet, and you can put, you could write about whatever you want. But the most important thing that makes a blog different from a static web page is that it allows people to write in and comment, and it's linked to other media. It's purely networked. So a blog, you know, about storytelling, and there are actually a lot. Google storytelling blogs, and you'll find a lot of people writing about this, especially recently. It's become very hot. We'll have a person might write every week about something that interests them. They'll say, hey, check out this on this website, or, oh my gosh, watch this video. And you can put a YouTube link in there, music in there. But this is all about networking. So people write into the blog. You can look at a blog and see with analytics where people are reading it and what's going on. And just to illustrate, I started blogging, you know, what's considered like the early days, which was 2004. And I had heard about it because Motto Magazine had, put me together with someone. They wanted me to start a blog. And when I took some time off, I went to volunteer for the presidential election in Florida, because I thought, oh my gosh, if I don't do something, I'll never be able to live with myself. I'm going to take 2 weeks and I'm going to work and try to make a difference. So I set up a blog basically because my parents, who are elderly, wanted to just keep up with what was going on and share it with their friends. And since I taught them how to use their Mac, they're comfortable with the computer. And so I would start posting things up there, like what happened to me today, you know, someone spit on me, or, you know, this happened. And, you know, I just started writing, you know, I can't believe that people, you know, are stealing, you know, people's voter registration forms, and how ugly, like a lot of the things I found, I was like, wow, there are certainly, you don't have to tell me there's a big divide between red and blue, because I'm really seeing it up close and personal. Well, I just wrote this just for, you know, friends and family, but people started finding it. And I would be at this little headquarters, and then someone would say, hey, you know, who's Kate? There's a TV crew here from France who wants to talk to you. Or, you know, there's a reporter. So I was interviewed in a bunch of things, and I didn't publicize it. I didn't do anything. I just put it out there. People wrote to me and I wrote back, or they'd say, well, that's not really true. Well, yeah, here, look, here's a video that I shot and I put that up there. Or here's a picture of this, you know, really horrible racist sign that I took. And, you know, and it kind of put people in this experience, and all these people just started finding it. And I was like, wow, you can do this almost without really trying. You know,
right.
What's the possibility, you know, if you were a little bit more deliberate about it? So that's what's so neat about that. And a blog, so, you know, it's that leaves people hanging a little bit. Well, what's going to happen next? And if you blog and you do it a lot, wow, you know, it's great practice for being a storyteller, you know, to think like a writer. It's like you were saying about the Dan Kennedy, write a story every week. Yeah, you should do that. And you should probably put it on a blog.
Why not? Exactly.
And put some questions on there and put it out there and tag it and put it on some sites and see, you know, see who you get. You know, my sister and I are working on a project, and we have a blog for that because we're in two different cities, and started this for us to collaborate. And we'll look at the site analytics sometimes, and we'll say, oh my gosh, China, Belgium, Mexico, you know, there's not just like the two towns where our families live. You know, there's somehow people find it and they are reading it.
Interesting. So how do they find it? They just do a search and whatever your comes up?
They can do a search, and there's ways you can register your blog on the on different services, or where you set up the blog, you can put like little keywords about it, like on Blogger or Technorati, or you know, you can designate it. But often, I mean, through the, you know, who knows the mystery? If I knew the mysteries of Google and spiders and search engines, I could, you know, I could retire probably.
Exactly.
But you know, there's, I think blogs generally, from what I understand, tend to increase your rankings and score higher. They're seen as real content. So, they do come up. And as I mentioned earlier, there is that Google search that only searches blogs. And I think more and more people use that, like journalists use it, for the same reason that we talked about. Well, I want to talk to a real person who cares about this. I don't necessarily want to just talk to a PR flack. Where's a real person who is living this and experiencing it? And what do they have to say? Let me try to find them.
Yeah, they don't want the spin. They want the flesh and blood person. That makes a lot
of sense. And it's a great way to learn how to interact with people, you know, virtually, to get people to write into you, to get people. You have to be, on this, you have to be a little controversial, a little bit, you know, out there, to get people to kind of start talking to you and start talking to each other.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. That's really one of the underlying things of Web 2.0, I believe, is the community aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I know my kids are on either YouTube or MySpace, like from the moment they get done with their homework. Like they're in the same room and they're interacting with, you know, who knows, with people all over.
Right.
Or not even necessarily interacting, but they're putting their profile on, you know, they're underage, so you can't get to their profiles. I'm not really that concerned, as long as they don't go have any strange meetings.
Right, exactly. You got to kind of keep a little eye on that, I'd imagine. But I mean, I'd say they are interacting in a way. It's a different way. I mean, I didn't get to do it when I was 12 years old. Gosh, I never would have gone outside ever if I had.
I know, exactly. I met this one kid who's 15, named Allie, last summer at Alex Mendoza and Armand Morin, like a customer appreciation day. And this kid, it was like a Friday. He had taken off school to come to this free event. His mom drove him, and he cut school to go to this internet marketing event. And so he was kind of shy, kind of hanging back and eavesdropping on people, kind of listening. And I could tell because he's the age of my kids. And I was like, hi, how are you? What's going on? And he's like, you know, I just came to learn. I have this book on photography, this ebook, and I just came to learn and all this kind of stuff. Well, the next time I saw him was, maybe 8 months later at another event, the Wonder Women of the Web, driving a Maserati.
Oh my gosh.
Set up this MySpace page, and I don't know the details of how he got it going, but he monetized it, bought his family a home in Beverly Hills, driving a Maserati, and he's still just the sweetest kid you've ever known. But he leveraged MySpace somehow. I'll have to do another class on that when I find out exactly what he did later.
Exactly.
Is another place to really use storytelling and to express yourself. That's the one fun about storytelling, is you can really express yourself.
Exactly. And with all things, like, you have an audience, you know, you have a platform where people can get to you that you never had, you know, you never had before. You couldn't have just like sent random, you know, postal letters to all those people. I'm sure he contacted them on MySpace. That would never happen.
Right.
You know, that is, you know, it's just that network, that social networking, and all the stuff that's on there comes from actual people. You know, it's not just like, here's like a magazine or a newspaper or whatever. Those are all interactive and you know, can just like the blog, it allows you to bring in all kinds of different media. Because I know a lot of people on there, they're fans, they have their music, they have their videos, they have their photos, and then they have, you know, people's comments that you can see. So yeah, I mean, I'm not on it. I'm kind of resisted actually being on it myself, but I use it for research a lot.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but you're so right. Most people have a MySpace page. And I was going through like some of my internet marketer friends, and I would see all their friends were other friends of mine. So I like asked all these people to be my friends. So now I'm collecting friends on MySpace.
Because it's all, yeah, you gotta get all those friends. Yeah,
exactly. It's like a contest or something. It's just,
and you know, you do, you see entertainers, you see business people, you see, especially this year in the election campaign.
Exactly.
Political presidential candidates, and there's this whole nature of like, we're going to go out there because this is where people are now. People aren't sitting watching the news and waiting for my commercial, but they're on MySpace. I'm going to talk to them there, and I'm going to let them, you know, respond to me. And there's a story today, actually. It's one of the blogs that I write for, if I can just give a shout out to it. It's the Motto Magazine blog, and the URL is whatsyourmotto, no apostrophe, just whatsyourmotto.com. And the story that my friend, the editor Kevin, wrote today is how Hillary Clinton, on her website, she has, you know how they always have to have the candidates have a theme song, you know, whatever they play. Well, she has a chance on her site where you can vote for 9 different songs, what you think Hillary should make her theme song. Should it be Beautiful Day by You Too? Should it be I'm a Believer? Should it be, yeah.
That's fantastic.
And it's that's the whole Web 2.0 notion of like, I'm going to go to you and I'm going to ask you what you think, and you're going to be able to, you know, to respond, you know, for me. So take a look at that. It's interesting. And it's like, yeah, this is not just for little kids in their attic. You know, this is for, these people are very well funded, you know, whatever you might think of like her as an individual. These are not people who are just messing around.
Absolutely.
They realize how important this is.
And the better that you can tell a story, of course, the more interesting your content.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it comes full circle back around, doesn't it?
Yep, it becomes part of your story. And think how fast the story can spread on the internet. You know, think how fast someone can pick up something and link it, and then all of a sudden, everybody knows.
Absolutely. You know, I forgot to mention, too, and I think this is on the mottomagazine.com website, but your interview with Deepak Chopra?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? And the guy from The Secret, which guy was that, Dennis?
Oh, yeah. There's a podcast I did, actually, with David Shermer. He's the guy in The Secret, the Australian dude who talks about chicks in the mail. And he gets the parking space. He's a sweet guy, you know, great, you know, fascinating. And we sat down and talked about, you know, how he got to be from a broke farmer living on oatmeal to this, you know, multimillionaire with all these businesses, and he trains people in wealth creation and how to use the stock market. And he, you know, basically has a high school education. He has none of the traditional things that people think they need, you know, to succeed. And he talks about, you know, that and how he does it. And he's on MySpace. All the secret people are on MySpace. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But they're all, you know, they're all there, and they're all each other's friends. So yeah, on that site, there's, you know, it's a mixture. There's the podcast, you know, section. There's some stories from the magazines, and then there's the blog, and all of that, you know, and a lot of sites like this too, it's integrated. So it's like, oh, there's some video, there's some stuff where I can, you know, write my opinion. And so those are all different storytelling mediums.
Exactly. It's a good example of how to integrate all of those storytelling aspects.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Well, so in general, let's just distill this down to Web 2.0. What do they have in common, all of these areas?
All, you mean all of the different, like the podcasts and the wikis?
Blog, the MySpace. Yeah, we didn't really cover wikis, but those are also something that people add to freely.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're accurate.
of course.
They have to have some checks and balances. But, yeah, it's just one more space where people are and interactive.
Right.
What do they have in common?
Well, they're all basically a place where you can tell your story using different media, whether it's words, video, you know, your voice. It's a platform that can enable you to link and interact with people all over the place. And the other thing they have in common, and this is the 2.0, the connectivity where it comes in, the audience is part of your narrative. You know, the people who are writing to you and reading to you and submitting and responding are part of creating your story. They're helping you. They're giving you that feedback to know, hey, are people getting this? Do people care? Is this a good story?
Yeah, it's immediate feedback, isn't it?
Yeah, it's immediate. And even if it's, you know, mean, crappy feedback, you could also argue, like, actually, that's not bad because someone is listening and you've hit a nerve somewhere.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing and a difficult thing to do, you know, to make that connection. And also, they're fantastic practice for learning to think like a writer, think like a storyteller that we talk about a little more on the handout. You know, how do you get an idea across really concisely? How do you leave people hanging with just enough? You know, how do you kind of talk about your experience in a way that makes people care, that connects to their experience? How do you get people to move, you know, in their mind or in their wallet or, you know, whatever the case may be, without actually being there in front of them? These are all, you know, they're different, but those are all underlying things, I think, that make, you know, that make them so, you know, essential to storytelling.
Right. I agree. So do you have any, before we get to the cheat sheet and go over the top 10, do you have any sort of parting comments about storytelling in general?
Well, I think in general, it's just something that when you start paying attention to it, it's so entertaining and captivating. You know, when you can start thinking to see kind of the angle and the hook in different things and to realize that, you know, everyone is interesting. Everyone has something that is fascinating. There's a great quote from the novelist Pat Conroy that says, if I could get all of you to tell the truth, and like, there's the truth again, don't forget the truth.
Right.
There's a novel in each of you. So whatever it is that fires you up, you know, and it could be, maybe it's not your business or your job. If you're listening and thinking like how to get into this and you think, well, I don't know, I just work for this company, I can't do that, I'd be in trouble, but I kind of want to try it. Think of what your, you know, what your passion is. There's that, someone talks about, there's a Japanese word for it called otaku, which is like so consuming that you could like stay up all night doing it. I know, Lori, with teenagers, they probably have this for, you know, it might be gaming or, you know, whatever it is that they love to do so much. And really, if you ever paid them a cent to do it, they would like want to do it all day long. So find whatever that thing is that fires you up, whether it's, you know, today I was actually at the Coca-Cola's new museum that they open up, and the people that collect memorabilia of Coca-Cola, they're all over the world. There's thousands of them, and they are into it. Oh, my gosh. I mean, there's people dressed like Coca-Cola circus clowns who have their whole basement. It's all, you know, Coca-Cola everything. You know, they try wear Coca-Cola underwear. And they have Coca-Cola. And they are into it, and there's a lot of them, and they know each other, and they meet each other, and they write about stuff, and they say, you know, is this an authentic 1928 bottle? Is this you know, and find whatever that is for you, and you might just want to start blogging about it, start a podcast, and put it out there, and kind of see what happens, and train yourself to be out there as a storyteller, and as someone who's part of a larger community, and you would be surprised, think, at what it does for you, just in terms of, you know, your own, maybe it's your marketing skill or just kind of how you interact with the world, but the connections that you can make.
Yeah, I agree.
You wouldn't be able to make them any other way.
It's very true. And it's much more of a lasting, deep bond when you're able to tell a story. And I love the idea of just, it doesn't have to be business. It's just something that you're passionate about. Like my son plays guitar. He could write a blog or just start writing little stories around guitar.
Yeah, and you know, you could bring it into your marketing too, you know, like you were saying, like you talked about, you know, your dog or, you know, it's all distinguishing what you do in a crowded marketplace. And it's like, you know, no product, like we're talking about meeting with Coke, the products maybe aren't necessarily that different. And honestly, if you're a service provider, maybe some of your services are not that different. Maybe there's a lot of people in India who could do your service or whatever. So why you? Well, then that's your story, you know, that makes people say, oh, no, her. Yeah, because she really, you know, I resonate with that. I connected with that story she told about, you know, her dog, her spray tan, you know, whatever the case may be.
Right. Well, exactly. Or even the reason why I went into copywriting to begin with, I won't go into the long story of it, but people are always, they love listening to it. I used to be embarrassed to say it because it was like, oh, it's all about me. But people are just fascinated that I left my job in the corporate world as a secretary to be a writer, and because I wanted to stay home with my kids, and you know, over time the copywriting developed. But it was just the fact that I was motivated so much to leave my workplace. A lot of people could see themselves in that they wanted to be with their family.
So absolutely, and I think for a lot of people, like the entrepreneurial life is like this dream, you you know?
God.
Right. Isn't it cool, though? You're like, oh, I have my own business, and people are like, whoa. Oh.
Totally cool. Well,
you know,
why don't
that's
we
cool.
pull up the cheat sheet and go through what's on there before we wrap up?
Sure. Okay. So shall we start at the top of the cheat sheet? It just kind of gives you a quick overview of some of the things that we talked about and maybe just touched on. You know, what's Web 2.0? What's a blog? What's a podcast? What's a wiki? MySpace and YouTube. And we have the URL, the web addresses for each of those on there. So you can go check it out. And, I believe I didn't put it on there, but the podcast is just, as I mentioned, just Apple's iTunes. That's where all these things, that's the one place where you see the most podcasts in one, one single interface.
With Apple again.
Well, I have to, you know, it's just true. I don't own stock in Apple. They don't give me any money. They should. Because I sell a lot for them, but it's just apple.com/iTunes. But if you just Google iTunes, it'll take you right to it. So that's kind of the basic. If you say, I want to explore this a little bit and see what this is all about. And if you haven't been on these things, I'd say don't be afraid. Don't think it's just for like crazy teenagers.
Because
none of these things are just for crazy teenagers. They are really important to business. You know, people are waking up to, you know, this whole new world, and they're seeing what it does, you know, to their bottom line. So you should at least be familiar enough. Maybe you're not going to play in each of these realms, you know, 100%. You should, I think, just to be current and to know how to market, how to speak to people, what's going on, I think it pays to at least be conversant with, you know, kind of what the whole thing is about.
Right.
And so that's that first part.
And then the 10 ways to pump up your storytelling muscle. This is such good information.
Well, I'll go through that because I know there was a little glitchy and we only maybe have 7 on the one that was handed out. So those of you who are listening, you can get your keyboards or your pen if you're old school ready to fill in the rest of them. So these are just ways to pump up your storytelling muscle. Like I said, it's not art, it's craft, it's practice. So the first one is to start really looking at people and welcoming random conversations. And the first part I did a course recently about public speaking and communicating. And our assignment for the first night was to pay attention to how much you really, if we look people in the eye, not that kind of like, I'm going to scan the room, make it and pretend that I'm talking to people, but really eyeball to eyeball connecting with someone for like a second or more. And you realize, wow, we go through our lives, we're just driving, we got our cell phone headset on, I'm checking out at the grocery store, I'm talking, we never look at anyone and we never connect with anyone, which affects our life, you know, in a lot of different ways. And when you start really looking at people and noticing things, you'll find your interactions change and you start being stimulated and getting ideas from places that you haven't before. And that's also where number 2, we talked about it a bit earlier, comes in, to eavesdrop in the coffee shop and use it as subject inspiration and write about it. Now, number 3 is like, okay, how am I going to capture all this great stuff? Well, you talk about this in your courses also. Carry a notebook, those little index cards, a voice recorder, whatever works for you to capture snippets of stories or ideas. And this is especially important if you're going to get into blogging or podcasting. I mean, the key to it, it's simple, but it's not easy, is that you have to put content out there all the time or people stop looking and people stop caring. And it's hard. Sometimes you think, I've got nothing to write about. I have nothing to say.
Exactly.
Well, stockpile those little things. You know, that snippet might just be that overheard, you know, bit of conversation. Or like, oh my gosh, I can't believe now that people in Starbucks use Starbucks as a place to like fire people, have job interviews, you know, all the conversations I've heard in Starbucks. Well, you might just scribble that down. And then someday when you think I have nothing to say, you can go back there and pick that up. And it's like the Dan Kennedy 50 stories or whatever and use it. So, you know, and that also just trains you also to be paying attention. So number 4, a little more, if you want to be a little more passive, I love to listen to audio storytellers. And one of my favorites is a program called This American Life. It's on NPR. It's a guy named Ira Glass. And I believe now he also has it as a television show. And they are usually about an hour long. And they are amazing storytellers. They can take a subject where you think, oh my gosh, I would never care about that at all. And they'll do like 4 different mini stories with different perspectives on that subject. And you're absolutely riveted. Like this is the one where I'm driving and all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, wow, 60 miles, gone.
That's great.
And you can get that on iTunes also. So, you know, listen to audio storytellers and just kind of pick up, you know, their rhythm, how they do stuff, and the stuff that, that gives you, there's also an NPR series called Driveway Moments. And it's meant to be, you know, when you're listening to a really good story on the radio and you've pulled into your house and your home, but you can't get out because you got to hear how it ends.
I love it.
And so they collect those every week. Like, these are the driveway moments that make you just stop and be like, oh my gosh, what is going to happen at the end of that? And you can get them all as podcasts. You don't have to listen or have the radio on. You can just download them all and take them where you are.
I actually like E! Hollywood Story as well. Because
that one's fun.
They leave you hanging right before every commercial, and it's really great about pacing of, like, you know, coming up next, you'll find out what happened to make so-and-so have a drug overdose, and then you'll
find
out what was it. So they really know how to tease you into the next segment.
They're good, even old stuff. And, you know, their story arc is pretty much always exactly the same. You know, person has big dreams, works hard, achieves big dreams, terrifying descent into drugs, alcohol, abuse, you know, I'm nobody. And then I come back at the end. You know, it's the same, it's the exact same story thing. And you're riveted. Oh my gosh, the A is enough, kids. What's next?
Exactly.
It's the same thing. You can make this thing that doesn't seem so interesting and relevant really fascinating.
Yeah, totally. Depending on how you couch it, how you tell it.
Mm-hmm.
So go on. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh no, not at all. Oh, that's a good one. Let's see. So number 5 was just sit down and just write something for 10 minutes. How long is 10 minutes? Nothing. You know, that's like standing in line. No editing. Just like get an idea and just write it, like free write it. Kind of get yourself, you know, moving in that muscle and, you know, see what comes out. Might not be perfect, but it's hard for some of people to get that inner editor out of the way. Oh, yeah. What's the right word for that? Oh, this sucks. No one cares about this. I'm really bad at this. You got to turn that voice off really hard. So you can't let it intrude. That's that kind of power writing.
Yeah, Gary Albert used to say, if you're writing and you get writer's block, just start typing blah, 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 blah. Just don't stop.
Oh, yeah.
Keep going.
Something. Just look around. Find something. You know, and that's where number 6 comes in. This is one a little fun tip. Make a story out of a found object, like a grocery list. Like, I found someone's grocery list, like, on the street one day, and I, like, picked it up, and I was like, what's their life like? You know, who buys this? You know, but it's any, you know, anything can be the foundation of a story. You know, there's people that collect, like, random found objects and make whole exhibitions about them. And, you know, there's people that, like, buy people's old slides from garage sales and make, like, exhibits about them. They totally make up everything that happens. It's just the spark, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Another spark is number 7, is to go through old files on your computer. God knows what we have on our computer. Right? We've done that for a few years. And if you have a really good search function like Spotlight, you can just type in the word or concept that you're thinking about, kind of like Google. And just see what comes up. Oh, you know, I think at one time I might have thought about, you know, dance lessons and how dance lessons changed my life. Maybe I, and just type in that and just see what happens, you know, just see what comes up.
Right.
So that's a good one. And number 8 is kind of storytelling / life tip, is to accept more invitations. When people ask you to go somewhere, whether it's a blind date or a Tupperware party or bowling night, really go. You know, it's all material. You're going to get out there. Something's going to happen to you. You're going to see people, experience things. And sometimes we have to break ourselves out of our ruts, especially when you think about, who do I spend time with? Most of us spend time with people who are pretty much exactly like us.
Exactly.
You know, which is comforting and fine, but it's not exactly stimulating. Like the whole thing about go to the mall, ride the bus, go to Walmart.
Right.
See what else is out there. And especially if it's something that's really way outside, like where you would ever go. I love to do things like this. And that kind of ties into number 9, because a great way to do this in a very natural context is to travel. When you hit the road, you know, travel, you get so many great stories and so many different stimuli, you know, just from the act of, like, being in the airport with all these people and, you know, being in a new place, you don't have your familiar comfort things around you. So you have to move outside and pay attention and move in a world in a way that's more like an observer than someone who's comfortable. And that's a gold mine. I write a series of articles actually about travel for Motto Magazine. And it's not where to travel. It's about how to travel. So how to travel creatively, how to travel with a social conscience, how to talk to somebody on an airplane, you know, how to use that travel, which for a lot of people is a big, I know, Laura, you're not a love of getting on the airplane and going everywhere, you know, is a total ordeal, and making it something that's really rich that you can use in your life, in your marketing, and, you know, in your stories.
Right.
And the last one, number 10, is dig out that box of pictures. You know, remember pictures? You used to, like, go to the store and print them out.
Yeah, what are those?
You'd have them in an envelope, right? Remember how exciting it was, though? I kind of missed that.
I know. This is a bad spot. My eyes are closed.
But, you know, you'd look forward to it. You'd have that little piece of paper and be like, oh, my gosh, I have to wait 2 days to see if there's a picture. Maybe there's me standing next to him or, you know, whatever. And you'd open it up at the store and be like, oh, there it is. Or, oh, that's horrible. You know, well, I know you have all those pictures somewhere, and I bet a lot of you haven't, like, scrapbooked them into or scanned them. So get those shoe boxes out, shake them up, take a picture without looking, and then write the story behind it. You know, you're probably in it or connected to it, so you should remember something. And it might be a good gold mine of stuff, you know, from your past, from our common experiences.
Definitely.
You know, we've all grown up. We've all gone to school. You know, what were you saying?
That's a fantastic idea, especially just sort of for training wheels, even, just to get started. It's like, you know this story. Just write it now. You don't have to even pull it out of thin air. You know it by looking at the picture.
Yeah, like, oh, look, there's that dog we used to have. Or, oh, I remember that tricycle.
Oh, exactly.
And a lot of those will tap into those essential things that everybody can relate to, you know, or everybody had experiences, you know, like that, or a memory that could be stirred by that. And it's just fun. And it's again, it's about you. So it's interesting.
Exactly. Well, excellent. Well, Kate, we're actually toward the end of our time here. So I just wanted to thank you so much for sharing this amazing information.
Well, thank you for having me.
It was my pleasure. And you can find out more about Kate at katejandoh.com. That's YANDOH.com. And this is Lori Morgan Ferrero of Red Hot Coffee at redhotcoffee.com. And we do hope that you'll keep in touch and let us know. Go to our blog and let us know how your storytelling is going. Have a
Absolutely.
Great day. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.